פרשת וישלח. When I came in this morning, I told Ira that he's not getting any special mention today because he didn't have a letter to the editor of the Jerusalem Post for over a week now. The last one was a week ago on Monday, and I was going to talk about it last week, but of our Zmano, time passed, he's going to have to get some more exciting stuff into the Jerusalem Post. I want him to out Toby Willie. That's what he has to do. That's his responsibility. All right, everybody, here we go. Let's go. Last week's shiur was about the dream. Vayetze Yaakov, the dream. The ladder, angels of heaven going up and down, and the thrust of the last week's shiur was the guarantee that Jews will survive through history is given to Yaakov Avinu then, for Anochi Imcha will be with you wherever you go, Ushmarticha, and I'm going to watch over you until I bring you back to this land. Beginning of our Sedra, there's going to be another meeting up, so to speak, with an angel. A struggle between Yaakov and an angel. And what really takes place at the beginning of this Sedra is an outline of Jewish history from then until today. And the one who makes this point often in the Sedra, and certainly in the beginning of the Sedra, is the Ramban. Rabbeinu Moshe ben Nachman makes it very clear that this parasha of Yaakov's confrontation with Esau, he has, at the end of last week's Sedra, confrontation between Yaakov and Laban, and what happened was, we have it, let's read a little bit, and then we'll see what we can get. I give you the last sukkim of Parshat Vayetze. Yaakov followed the darko, Yaakov went on his way. Vayidgu bo malachei Elohim, and angels of God encountered him. Again, that means in last week's Sedra, there were angels at the beginning of the Sedra, there are angels at the end of the Sedra. Rashi explains that there's a changing of the God. Those angels who watched over him in Chutz Laretz, remaining in Chutz Laretz, and now coming down are the angels of Eretz Yisrael. Angels of Eretz Yisrael are big Zionists. They don't leave the country, God said. So now that Yaakov is on his way back to Eretz Yisrael, the angels of Eretz Yisrael come down to greet him. Vayom Yaakov kasherom. Yaakov said when he saw them, Machaneh Elokim zeh, this is the camp of God. Vayikra Shem HaMakom Ahu Machanayim, and he called the name of the place Machanayim. They were really, because there were two camps. The camp of the diaspora angels and the camp of the Israeli angels. And then begins this week's Sedra. Vayishlach Yaakov malachim lefanav el Esav achiv arzo seyis ne'edom. Yaakov is coming back and he knows that inevitably there has to be a confrontation between him and Esav. They haven't seen each other for 20 years and the last he knew of him, and he assumed that remained true at that moment as well, that Esav despised him. So Yaakov sent Malachim, and Rashi, fascinatingly enough, Rashi says, Malachim Mamish. Yaakov has angels who are at his disposal, and he sends them to Esau, his brother, in the land of Seir, the field of Edom. By Yitzhak, Tom, and Gomorrah, he commended them so, saying, Ko Tom, Run, Ladom, Yili, Esau. So shall you say to my master Esau, Ko Omar, Avdecha, Yaakov, so says your servant Yaakov, in Lavan Garti, Vo Echar Adota, I lived with Lavan, and I have tarried until now. He seems to be speaking very, you know, I have to use the right word. I mean, he comes, I'm your servant, he's my master. I have a feeling that Yaakov is a very, very, very smart man, you know. Sticks and stones will break my bones, but names that I utter out there, and it makes him feel good. You know, it's even possible that with some kind, well-placed words, he can begin to diminish or remove the sharpness of that hatred. And any diminishing of that hatred could stand him in good stead. So, you know.
You have a paper?
What kind? Huh?
Do you have a paper?
You have to see the woman in charge back there.
Okay.
Woman in charge, do you have? Okay. Alright. So therefore, you know, I feel that, you know, there are those who, the members who say, you know, he shouldn't have spoken that way. I personally see nothing wrong with it. I mean, like, my master Esau, so speaketh your servant Yaakov. It's no skin off his back. What do I care? So what? So I'll say all sorts of nice things to Esau. You know? As long as I end up not giving him anything. Talk nice. But you know what else you have to do? You have to carry a big stick. In this story of Yaakov's confrontation with Lavan, with Esau, he understands all the nice words. All the nice words are going to be as effective in direct relationship to how strong I am. If it's going to be nice words, but I can't back up my nice words with anything but nice words, Esau will destroy me on the spot. But when you have the advantage of, I'm ready to fight. That's why famous, the story as it unfolds over here, that Yaakov is going to prepare himself for the three things. Lidoro, he's going to send him a gift. And I say in it, that gift also comes with beautiful words. It's no skin off his back, so what? Tfilah, he prays to the Reshon, and Milchama, and he's ready to wage war. If you're ready to wage war, that speaks more than anything else. Alright, so let's see. In Lavan Garti, or Echa Adata, with Lavan I lived and I tarried until now. Everybody knows the famous Rashi. Garti is Begematria Taryag, Begematria 613. And the message that he tells Esav is, I lived with Lavan, and I was able to keep 613 mitzvahs. I must have told you. I told you. I had to. You'll remember. Those of you who heard, and those of you who remember. About 35 years ago, at least. I remember I was in West Hempstead at the time. There was a whole week TV film presentation called The Holocaust. Yes. Every night there was another segment about 2 hours. All right. So I remember it was so fascinating. I loved it. It was great. While the segment is playing, phone doesn't ring. The commercials begin, phone rings. Rabbi, how do I kasher my stove? Okay, yeah, all right, good, bang. All right, next segment begins. It's the week before Pesach. They had to show it. The anti-Semitan had to show that.
What did he say?
It was a great film. Okay, next time they come to a commercial. Rabbi, is Malashevitz wine kosher for Pesach? Yeah, okay. Nobody spends too much time with me on the phone because everybody has to get back to watching the... So there was one scene. There was one scene I remember, and I do tshuva for this. My whole life I do tshuva for this. A scene that I saw that for a moment struck me as... The Germans, Yimach Shemah, are moving in. They're moving into the Warsaw Ghetto. And the Warsaw Ghetto was prepared to fight. And then the scene shifts to one apartment where there are fellows with guns, homemade guns, everything, ready to shoot. And they begin to shoot down, and the Germans are just, they don't know what's hit them. In the next room, there's a family sitting down to the Seder. It was the first night of Pesach. See, I'm talking like a Chutz Lawrence person. First night of Pesach, the Seder night, all right? And for a few seconds I thought, what are you sitting by the Seder? Take a gun and go out there and shoot. And I caught myself. No. We wage war with the Esavs of this world on two levels. We wage war by fighting, and we wage war by virtue of the fact that they cannot and never will stop us from doing what we're supposed to do, which is the fulfillment of mitzvahs. You know what they're saying up there? Those guys who are in there sitting down to the Seder are saying, Imovon Garti, the Taryak Mitzvah Shamati. Esav, watch out. We're an eternal people. I lived through Lavan, I'll live through you as well. Remember then I said that there's the spirit of struggle to fight and struggle of the spirit. The ones who are shooting down over there, that was the spirit of struggle. You need that. You have to be ready, milchama. But then the ones who were sitting there down to the Seder, this was the struggle of the indomitable spirit of the Jewish people. So he tells him, Lavan Garti, I'm not afraid of you, Esav. And Lavan Garti, otherwise what? Lavan says, so you were a big town's children, big deal. You think that scares me? No. He's telling him, we are a formidable force, Esav. Formidable force. We stood up to a loved one. We can stand up to guys like you. Anyway, I've become wealthy. Thank God. You know, I don't know. It really he means to tell him, I don't need anything from you. I don't need anything from you. I don't want anything from you. I'm not coming to see you in order to get rich from you. I don't want anything from you. And you know, it goes, listen, and Esav has a shtickle derech eretz for a reichahiv. Does have derech eretz, you can't help it. They have derech eretz. It reminds me, of course, I knew Moshe Reichman, and I think that he presented that to the world. I remember he first came to Toronto. He came a year or two before me. He came, I think, in 57, 58, I came in 59. 59, I started building the yeshiva, and I needed tiles, so I went to Moshe Reichman and I got tiles. He was living in a walk-up apartment, three flights up. But from the time that he became big, you understand? Can you imagine? Everything was closed down, every Shabbos and every Yom Tov, and everybody was paid. It's unbelievable, Kiddush Hashem. That's in love and guarantee. In Lavan Garti, I kept Taryag Mitzvahs under the most difficult of circumstances. He was a Zichron Zocher Latov, one of the great Jews of the of our generation. Vayoshuvim ha'alachim, the angels came back to Yaakov and they told him, Bono Achicha Lezer, we came to your brother Esav. The Gamholet, the Trotzel, is coming toward you. V'arba meyot ish, imodar, 400 men armed to the teeth. V'yido Yaakov yod, Yaakov is frightened. V'yetzelo, and he was hard pressed, and then he prepares himself for the confrontation. And it says, "Vayachat said to Omar Shemitov, he divided the people that were with him, Vatatzom, Vatapoko, Vagamalim, Lishneim Arkhonot. He divides his whole camp into two camps, and he said to himself, if Esav is going to come against one camp, Viko, Voyamachane Hanishalot, later the other will survive. Then Vayom Yaakov, Yaakov prays, Elikeyavi, Alkom, the God of my father Avram, the God of my father Yitzhak. The God who said to me, beginning of last week's, at the end of last week's segment, Shuv, you told me, Shuv, La'arzachol, La'arzachol, go back to your land and your birthplace, Ve'tiva imach, and I will do good for you, Katonti, Mikola, Chasodi, Mikola, Emes, I vey, from all of the kindness and goodness that you did to me, here it is when I went out to Chutzaretz, I crossed the Jordan with nothing more than my staff in my hand. And now I've returned, and look at this. 11 children. The 12th is going to be born later on in the Seder. That's Binyamin. Wonderful. What wonderful students I have. I stand corrected. Of course, it was my chauvinism. I only counted the boys, you understand? Which is a terrible thing. There were 12, 11 boys and one girl, okay? And in Yitzhak Shem, the 13th child, the 12th boy, is going to be born in Eretz Yisrael. One has to be born in Eretz Yisrael. One has to be born in Eretz Yisrael. And he's going to, of course, be a great power. His enical generations down the line, Mordechai, is the one who's going to be, and Esther are going to be the messengers of God to save the Jewish people again. It's all the schus of Binyamin having been born in Chutz Laaretz, in Eretz Yisrael, but more than that. Mordechai, according to the Medrash, Mordechai tells that to Haman. Listen, Haman, my ancestor didn't bow down to Esav. They're all going to bow down to Esav. The only one of the family who never bows down to Esav is Binyamin, because he wasn't born yet. He doesn't bow down. All right. Anyway, so he prepares himself. He prepares himself for the great struggle. And we'll begin with this first. Let's go on to the other side. Side to our selections from the Ramban. We'll do as many selections as we can. Let's begin with the first one. The Ramban, Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman, has a brief introduction to this parsha. Nechteva ha-parsha hazot. This parsha was written, lahodia, to let us know. Ki hitzil ha-kodesh baruch et avdo, uga'olo miyad chazok imenu. That the Holy One, blessed be He, saved His servant and redeemed him from the one who is stronger than him. Vayishlach Malach, God sent an angel, Vayatzileu, and saved him. That's number one. Number one. That God promised and God saved. The Ramban is going to make a number of times the point that whatever takes place in this parsha is an indication of what's going to happen to the Jewish people throughout all of history. The second thing, Ulalamdeinu of the Ramban says, teach us also, Shehu lo batach b'tzidkato, Yaakov did not place his trust in his own righteousness. And not only that, he didn't place trust, not that he didn't trust, but at the straight. He knows God has promised him. Maybe Yaakov should just sit there and twiddle his thumbs. I have, what, me worry? I have nothing to worry about. God promised that he's going to save me. I don't have to do anything. Haman says, no. That's not what happened. He didn't place his trust in his righteousness, the Ishtadel the Hatzalah, the Chol Yechalto. He put in the effort to save himself, whatever he was capable of doing. And we'll see something soon about this as well. Very important. V'yesh ba'od remez l'dorot. Those two words, remez l'dorot, a hint or an indication of what's going to happen generations down the line, appears a number of times in the Tanakh. There's a remez l'dorot kikar shed eira lo avinu v'esav achiv. Whatever happened to our father with Esav, his brother, ye'era lanu tamid im b'nei Esav, it will happen to us constantly with the children of Esav. Number four, and here it gets very interesting. V'roi lanu lechos b'darko shel tzadik. We should also conduct ourselves like that righteous one, Yaakov. We should prepare ourselves in the same three ways that he prepared himself. L'tvila, l'doron, ul'hatzola, tvila, prayer, doron, send gifts to Esau, ul'hatzola v'derech milchama. Now, watch the next word. To save by virtue of war, livroach. Well, did he not say, what did livroach means? To run away. What does it mean to run away? What does it mean to run away? Isn't that the opposite of milchoma? Milchoma means to stand and fight. And he says, livroach. Does that sound like war? Will he not sail and be safe? I have a feeling that what the Ramban is saying is the following. In Chutz La'aretz, we will never win a war. We never won a war. In Chutz La'aretz, there's one thing to do. Livroach, to flee, run. They're causing you trouble in one country, get out and fight. Now it's interesting. There's, we talked a number of times about the Rambam with a mem, Maimonides, in his great letter to the Jews of Yemen. He writes toward the end of the letter, you should know if you find yourself any place where life is difficult, get out. Don't take anything into consideration. And cloth, run. By the way, the Rambam had practiced exactly what he preached. His father and the family fled from Spain when their part of Spain became very dangerous. They went to Morocco. And when they got word that the authorities in Morocco were after them, he flees by boat across the Mediterranean to Eretz Yisrael. He didn't stay for a moment in a country that had turned dangerous. And therefore he tells that to the Jews of Yemen. Flee. Run. But wait a minute. The same with Rambam. Let me take you to the next page. The last source. This is a fascinating, fascinating source. And this is from the Rambam. I underline the M. That's number 8. This is one paragraph of a long letter that was written by the Rambam to the wise men of Marseille. They had sent him a very long letter in which they basically asked him what is his opinion of astrology. That people's lives are governed in great measure by when they were born, under what mazel they were born. Mm-hmm. And up until today, I think there's still newspapers that have the daily horoscope. I'm a family of people who don't, if it sounds bad, they don't get out of bed that day. That's all, you know. I always think it's the harbor scope. And but the Rambam in his detailed letter to them says, it's nonsense, it's ridiculous, it's shtuyot. And then he writes, v'zehu, v'zohi, sh'ovda malchuteinu, because of this we lost our kingdom, the second commonwealth, v'hekariva heichaleinu, and our temple was destroyed, v'higiyonu ahalom, and we reached the situation in which we find ourselves throughout the diaspora, sh'avoteinu chatu v'einam, our father's sin, and the animal. You know why? Fascinating what the Rambam says. Lufi shemotzu svarim rabin ve'elu hadvarim shel divrei hachozim b'kochavim, because they found many books that deal with these stargazers' ideas. Shedvarim elu hein ikar avodah zarah. He says, this astrology, this is the very heart of idolatry. Kamosha b'yaru, as we explained in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Tohu v'noachrein, they made the mistake and they followed these wisdoms, in quotation marks, of astrology. V'dinu shen chachmot mefuarot, and they thought that these were great sources of wisdom, points of chachma. V'shyez ben toel gadolah, they thought that it has a great deal of meaning and benefit. And you know what they didn't do? V'lonit asku lobel emidat milchama v'lobel kibush haratzot. Listen to the words of the Rambam. They didn't learn how to fight, and they didn't involve themselves in conquest. Their job was to make sure that they have an army that's the best in the world, and they didn't have it, because they were looking at things through the eyes of astrology, and they just didn't do. Quite a statement for the Chacham to make. The Chacham is saying it was our fault. We lost the second Bet HaMikdash because we just weren't strong enough. And he assumes that we could have been strong enough to withstand the legions of Rome. How many times have I told you, one of the great Roman historians said, when Judea rebels, the entire Roman Empire quakes. Judea was the smallest province of the half-globe girdling Roman Empire. And when poor Yidaloch in Rome, in Judea, rebelled, that's when Rome trembled. That's what they should have been doing. They should have been creating an army second to none. This is the Rambam. Now remember, this is the same Rambam who in the letter to the Jews of Yemen says, run! Obviously, the Rambam is talking about, if you're in Yemen, Habibi, run. If you're in Eretz Yisrael, you're not running. From here, you don't run. From here, you have to stand and fight. Here, he said, what they should have done was create a standing army that would be able to wage war with the even greater powers. Shalom's Astu Lobel Velonit Astu Lobel and Midat Milchama, they were not involved neither in learning how to fight, Velope Kibush Arozos, and not conquest of lands. Eladimu, they thought, Shal Tanhat Varim Yo Ilahem, their dabbling in astrology is going to help them. That's why the prophets call them fools, and I don't know, what's another word for fools? Marla should mention. Vadai scholim hayu, the Rambam says, of course they were fools. They followed that which is nothing and can't benefit them. Over here we see, by the way, this I already said often in the past, I'm not going to go do that again. The fascinating difference between the end of last week's Sedra, where Laban has pursued Yaakov across Mesopotamia. He catches him in Gilad. And Yaakov is helpless. And the most that he can say is a great speech. Ma pishiu machatosi ki galakta acharka. What did I do wrong that you pursued me? A few psukim later, we go into this set. We always forget the end of the parasha before. The whole week passed. And maybe we didn't get to the end of the parasha last week. At the end of last week's Sedra, Yaakov stands helpless before Laban. Beginning of this week's Sedra, he puts his entire family on a war footing. He's ready to fight. Why didn't he do that to Laban? He sees Laban is pursuing him. Fellas, we're going to make a stand over here. Two camps, armed to the teeth. We're going to give this guy Laban a lesson like he never had in his whole life. Doesn't do that. I said this already for 40 years. The Yaakov-Laban confrontation takes place in Chutz Lartz. We never won a battle. The closest we came was the Warsaw Ghetto. And that was a battle they knew would be lost to begin with. Never occurred to them that they were going to converge victorious. But this, the confrontation between Yaakov and Esau Zerer, it's a completely different Yaakov. Completely different Yaakov. Here he prepares himself for war. Here he's going to fight. And that explains the Rambam. When the Rambam is talking in this letter about what happened to the second coming of Jews in Eretz Yisrael, and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and they were exiled, and they lost their independence, it's because they should have learned how to wage war. And where necessary, conquer. But the Jews of Yemen run. I believe that's what the Ramban means. We're going back to Ramban. The Ramban says.
The Ramban or the Ramban? Because Ramban, yeah.
That was the Ramban.
The
Ramban is the one who says that the second Beit HaMikdash was destroyed because they didn't learn how to fight. Now you understand, I'm not going to take you through everything else. The Gemara gives so many different reasons why the second Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. No place does it say anything like what the Chamam says. Is the Chamam disagreeing with all the Gemara's sinas chinam and this aveira and that aveira? No. The Rambam is looking at it on the practical, real level. In the world of reality, it was they just weren't ready to stand up against the enemy. Why? May very well be because, yes, sinas chinam may have been that which contributed to it. Maybe if we didn't get along well with one another, we weren't able to get everybody to become involved in creating the force that would be necessary to stand up against Rome. But now we're going back to the Ramban. Nachmanides. It's easier to say it. No, Nachmanides and Maimonides. Anyway, so the Ramban, let's go. So where we were learning the Ramban over there, number two, that he prepared himself for three things. He's talking about what we should learn from it. What we should learn from it, he's talking about Jews in Chutz Lartz, because there were no Jews in Eretz Yisrael at the time. There was no Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael at the time. Our rabbi saw all of this alluded to in this parsha, as I will explain. Okay. In number three, it seemed the geography is a little problematic here in the parsha. It seems that Yaakov Avinu is making, according to the parasha, he's making some kind of a detour not far from the land of Esau, which was not, you know, he could have gone straight to Eretz Yisrael. It seems he may want to settle, well, not settle scores, like, you know, sort of just diminish the hatred that he has. So he ends up somewhere near the land of Edom. He sends the angels to his brother Esau to the land of Seir. The southern part of Eretz Yisrael is right next to the land of Edom. His father was living in the land of the Negev. Yeshlo lavar derech Edom o karov misham. He has to go through. What Raman says over here, I can't go into them, but it's problematic because the end is from here. He's going to arrive in Shechem, which means he's in the north, he's not in the south. And it's in Shechem where he's going to buy a field and he's going to build a house. So the geography over here is a little bit problematic. But it seems that in some way, Yaakov went out of his way in order to meet up with Esau. And Chazal said about him, the Rambam brings a medrash, Machazik, a pasuk in Mishlei, Machzit Bosnei Kelev. Somebody grabs the ears of a dog, you know. That's not too smart. You know, you stay away. Huh?
Was that noise from your microphone?
There's a noise?
Yes.
There's a whistle?
Yes.
No. All right, help. There's nothing else around here. So let's see, I'll stay a little bit away from it. You still hear it?
No, it's not from your microphone.
All right. Okay. And so the Pasuk in Mishlei says, Marzit Biosne Kelev, you know. You don't go over and grab a dog's ear. You know what happens when you grab a dog's ear? The dog is going to turn around and give you a zampas. You won't know it hit you. In other words, he says, you know, you're starting up, you came to... He didn't go out of his way, it seems, to come to Esau. Leave him alone. Let's sleep in the dog's lie. Shlomo Melech didn't say that, but he might have said it in this context here. But then the next paragraph, Valdato, what's on the line? Valdati, my opinion is Gamzeg Yirmos. This is a very, very, very difficult, quite an accusation. Valdati, it's my opinion, Gamzeg Yirmos. This also hints, Ki anachnu hitchalnu nefilateinu biyad Edom. We are the ones who caused our fall into the hands of Edom. He's talking about the Second Commonwealth.
But the microphone is down.
Huh?
Talk louder.
Talk louder.
He's talking louder.
And louder, it's no good. Nothing is happening now.
Because of that screeching sound.
How's it doing now? I don't need the mic. Is that a compliment?
Yeah.
I don't need the mic. Please make sure that it's fixed. We need the mic. It's not so. All right, anyway. The Ramban says, my opinion.
It's not
good? You know what this film is going to look like? They'll look at it in New York, they'll think, what's going on over there, those Israelis? They can bomb Iran, but they can't get a decent mic going. All right. Valdati Gamzeg Yirmos, this also hints and is an indication. We began our fall in the hands of Edom. Kimalchei Bayit Sheni, the kings of the second commonwealth, Bo Bebritim Haromim, they made a treaty with the Romans. They invited them into Aza and Yericho Tchila, brought them from Tunis over here. That's what the Ramban is saying. We created the Tzohar. And then they invited Rome in. There was a civil war going on between Hercules and Aristobulus, and each side wanted Rome on their side. And there were Jews who came to Rome. We should have stayed away from Rome. Certainly never to have invited Rome into Eretz Yisrael. This sort of friendly, overly friendly relationship with Edom in Jewish history, it is written. We know it is a fact. They invited them in, and ultimately they came in not as allies, they came in as conquerors, and they destroyed the second Beit HaMikdash. In a sense, that's what's happening over here. Yaakov's going to get away with it. But he had no business going there in the first place. Take a different route. Go elsewhere. Number four is interesting. Rabbeinu Rov Od Vazeitz Amru Rabbi Yanai. Rabbi Yanai said, "Can have a solid lemalchuta when he would have to speak to the king or Caesar." On behalf of the Jewish people, having the stakel bahada parshata, he would learn over parshat Vayishlach. Before they would go to meet with kings or commanders of foreign countries, they would learn parshat Vayishlach. V'lo havinosev imei Roma in, and they would not take Roman soldiers with them as their guardians. We're better off traveling on our own without them. And he says, Chazman one time, Lo Estakelbo once, Rabbi Yanai, one time on one of his journeys on behalf of the Jewish people, he didn't learn Parshas Vayishlach before he went. V'nosevi made Roma in, and he took a guard, a company of Roman soldiers. He didn't, by the time he reached Akko, he hadn't even left Eretz Yisrael yet. He had ended up selling every last thing that he had, even his little lamp that he had with him. He sold everything because he had to pay these guys off that they shouldn't kill him. So that was the mistake he made of not learning Parshas Vayishlach. Here is the important, I should have had this on the line. Because Chazal had received from their Rebbeim Shezu Parshat Gamut, the beginning of Parshat Vayishlach, until after Yaakov's confrontation with Esau. This is called Parshat Gamut. This is the story of the Jewish people in exile. When he came to Rome, when he would come to Rome, into the courtyards of the kings of Edom, about communal matters, he would read this parashah. He should follow the counsel of the wise old man, Yaakov. From him generations should see, and so shall they do. He would not accept the Romans to accompany him. They're only interested in their own benefit. You know what he's saying? Nations have interests. Now, it may very well be, in Rosh Hashanah it is, that at this particular juncture in history, America's interests are not Israel's interests. We have to know who are our friends. And even if they weren't friends, their interests may be completely different. We have one overriding interest, which is the safety and security of every Jew in Eretz Yisrael. And if necessary, whatever we can do for Jews anywhere else in the world. And that's how we have to look at it, single-mindedly. Not an easy period we're going through. We're going through an extremely difficult period of time. Because we don't know where our lives. I mean, so, you know, my mother last summer said that a glick at Machbet Chofen, that all of a sudden we have a new ally, friends, all of a sudden is not with us. Very understand. If we have to depend on friends to understand, guarantee you it's better to depend on the Rabbi Yisrael. Believe me, France is all of a sudden.
France.
Gotta read the papers. You know, I don't come into this place until I know the parasha backwards and forwards, and the Jerusalem Post at least forwards. All right. Do you understand? This is the parasha. And you know what? What was the counsel of that Zokain? Yaakov, his counsel was to be ready, l'doro, l'tfil, l'chama. I will talk. I'm going to talk. I will negotiate. But I'm ready to fight. If you look in the parsha itself, I'll tell you where to look. You know what really happens over here? You know what he does? It'll be too much. He prepares himself for the gift, for prayer. And that's how Rashi and Rambam say, Dorom, Tfilah, and Luchama. A gift, a prayer, and war. But that's not what it says in the parasha. The first thing that he does is, he prepares himself for war. If you read the parasha, he prepares himself for war, milchama, prayer, gift. That's the order in which they appear in the parasha. He divides the camp in two. If Esau will come to one, the other one will survive. He prepares himself, in fact, for war. Then he prays. And then he sends the gift. But not for both Rashi and Rambam use different terms. Yes?
Second camp, were they supposed to run or were they supposed to fight?
They're supposed to run. Because it says, the camp that remains will be lit later. They will be the survivors. Do you understand? The way it's written in the Torah makes a lot of sense. Now, the first thing he has to do is prepare himself for war. And then he prays. Because what would happen if he would pray first and then prepare for war? You know what it would seem? You know, I've set my capital tillin, but I'm not so sure really that the capital tillin is going to help. So you know what? I'm preparing for war. If you prepare for war first, and then you say the capital tillin, you're making a profound statement. I've made all my preparations for war, but for Ben Shloilam, it's in your hands, and therefore I'm praying to you. The last thing he does is he sends the gift. Can't send the... I could ask Akasha if I want to be... Send the gift first and see what happens. Maybe you won't need to do anything. One thing Yaakov Avinu knew, if he's going to send a gift to Esau, and he's not prepared for war, Esau will say, I got that, I'm taking everything. You know when a gift is meaningful? When it's backed up by an army that's ready to fight. I said it a few weeks ago, you know, if they're going to negotiate seriously with Iran, and it will succeed really, not the phony successes, it will only be because there's one country on the face of this earth that has its planes warming up to destroy the Lali. If there would be no fear of an Israeli air force, all the talking is meaningless. Yaakov Avinu knows his doron, his gift to Esav, has to be backed up with a fist, a strong arm. Carry a big stick. That's the only thing that meant anything to him. Then you, because otherwise, you know what the gift is? If you're not ready for war, the gift is some pitiful, poor, penurious appeal to appeasement. I like that sentence. What did I like that sentence? It's some kind. Can I repeat it? No, I have to watch it. it's trying to please Esau, take my gift and don't kill me. That doesn't work. You have to carry the big stick. That's what you have to have. All right, let's go. Come on, we got to hop behind a little more. Yes.
I don't see the preparation for war. I see he divides into two camps. If this one gets killed, the other one will survive. Where is the war? I don't. It's not in the shot.
Someplace over here, I have the Medrash that says this is great stuff. Medrash says that he clothed all of his children in white clothing with swords and daggers under their clothing. They come looking like men of peace, but Esav, he prepared for war.
But in the shot, it's only. This one will get killed, and this one will survive. I don't see war.
How do you get
them? They're both, they're all ready for war. They're armed to the teeth. They're armed to the teeth. And then the worst that will happen, he says, is if Chas V'Shalom's on the edges of Apim Rahman and Islam, one will be defeated, the other will survive. He's ready to fight him. He's dividing his camp they're getting armed. He has many servants with him. He has an army. These are many people. And the Rebbe says that even his children, you understand, they had their Uzis under their cloaks.
No mention of armament already.
No mention what? Medrash says that's good enough for me, and if it says Hiski Natzvo Lemelchama, we're not talking games over here. He's not coming with spitballs, you understand, or bow and arrow. No, bow and arrow is not bad. Let's go. Now number five, and this is. Such a painful, painful Rambam. The Rambam is talking about at the end, when the great confrontation between Yaakov and Malach, the Malach, during the night. That's the whole Shia should have been on that, but I gave the Shia that a few years ago, but all right. He gets one final lick in. The Pasuk, I always like to be, here it is, Yaakov ends up on the other side of the river, by Yivaser Yaakov Levado. I think I underline that. That's probably the most significant word in the whole parasha. Yaakov remained alone. And the Malach of Esau, the forces, the heavenly forces of Esau attacked him. And he struggles with them through the entire night. You know what it means? We're always going to end up alone. We are going to be alone. Make no mistake. And if it was ever seen in history, We see it now. We are alone. Nobody in the world we can depend on. And that's when the crucial struggle, Vayivose Yaakov Levado, is the great message to all generations. And don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. As the Medrash says, there's one other Levado. V'nizkor Hashem Levado Bayom Ahu. God will be mighty alone on that day. There's a Levado of Yaakov. Yaakov is alone, and God is alone. And if we have God on our side, you understand, we've got it made. That's exactly the position of Kol Yisrael today. We are alone, but the Rebbeinu is with us. What I always like is, as Dawn, by the way, Dawn in this story, Dawn means when it comes to the end of history. The Malach says, this miserable Esavik Malach says to him, Shalcheni, send me away. Ki Olah HaShachar, let me go. I remember one day it struck me, Malach, you've got to be kidding. I didn't start up with you. You started up with me. So how can you say, let me go? You know what it is? It's fascinating. You know what the Malach is doing? He's turning the victim into the aggressor. That's what the world has done to us. We've been the victims since 1948. Since the year one, we've been the victims. And all, you know, just turning around at us, you know? It's unbelievable. We're accused of everything, and we're innocent. The Malach Esav, a smart guy, Shalcheni ki Olah HaShachar, Dawn, let me go. Yaakov should have said, Gates of Rech, head and face. I didn't start up with you. Who wants you? He doesn't get it. So he says, yeah, he'll let him go. But he wants a blessing. And the blessing that he receives is that his name is going to be Yisrael. That's what the blessing of the Malach is. But now watch this on Balan Frey. We'll have to end on this note. So it's, the last thing that he does is he strikes Yaakov. And Yaakov is limping when it's all over. Yaakov is victorious, but he's limping. Vomru v'breishis chava, number 5. Noga v'chola tzadikim shi'osim liyot imenu. He struck. This Malach struck generations of Jews. It's all representative of what's going to happen through history. Zedoro shel Shmad, the generation of Shmad, v'ho'inyon, underlined. Ki ha'ma'orakula, this whole episode with the Malach, remez ledorotav, it's the third, fourth time, he's giving us a remez, an indication of what will happen in generations. There's going to be a generation where the children of Yaakov, Yidgaber Esav Aleim, Esav will become strong over them. Until it will come to the point where he's ready to crush them completely. And the Rabban tells which generation this was. Dor Echad b'nei Chachmei HaMishnah, a generation in the days of the wise men of the Mishnah. V'dor shel Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, the generation of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. K'mo she'omru Omer Abchiya Barabba, Abchiya Barabba said in Yomel Yodam, Tenav Shechal, Kedusha Shemo, Shal HaGadol Baruch Hu, the person will tell me, give your life to the sanctification of God's name, Ani Noten. I'm ready to give my life. U'bilvad she'yaharguni miyad, on condition that they kill me immediately. And not torture me. Aval b'doro shashmad. You know what they did, b'doro shashmad? Eini yochel esovo. That I can't take. Umaha yuosim b'doro shashmad. What did they do in that generation of shashmad? Hoi mevi'in kardudiyot shel barzel. Umalad ninotam b'ur v'nof ninotam tachat shichyeyen. Umasiyin nashotemen. They would take burning metal and put it under the armpits and people possibly would die from the torture. V'yesh dorot acherim, the Ramban says, there are other generations she'osu limanu kazeh, that they did like this, v'yoter Rami said, and worse than this, v'akol sofam, we suffered it all, v'olar aleinu, to test over us, k'mo sheromaz, as it says, after all, v'yavo Yaakov shochet. The only comment I have to make on this Ramban, you know what the Ramban couldn't imagine? That what would happen after his generation would be far more awesome than anything he was able to mention here. He thinks that he, the Ramban thinks, of course, by view of the part of history he was able to look at, that this was, these were the terrible things that did. The Ramban couldn't imagine the Cossack uprisings of 1648. The Inquisition in his own Spain, he could never have imagined the Inquisition. Jews being burned at the stake. The Shoah, nothing. Doesn't come close to anything that the Ramban has mentioned. The only thing that remains true about the Ramban, well, it's all true, but he simply couldn't even imagine what was going to happen afterwards. Hakol Savalno, we suffered it all. And you know what? And you know what happened? Yaakov Sholem, Yaakov came back to Eretz Yisrael complete, and he rebuilt. And that's what we did in our generation.
Who's that one?
Who's that one?